At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Daddy Disco night at Soul School yesterday, last night. You know how it is when girls dance with their dads. They dance for the first 5 minutes with their dads, and then that's it.
They're done with you.
And then that's it.
Especially when you have one dead foot. It doesn't make for such a great dancing partner, does it?
You can still bite your lower lip. Thank you, hospital, for special surgery. I had that. So dad's disco night. So the girls go off on their own. They're doing their games, and they have a DJ, and it's a lot of fun, and they have a lot of fun. But the dads then congregate on the sidelines as they watch the girls dance. So my pal, who's the Israeli-American, and I were talking about the BB visit. Of course, you know, we always talk about politics, and, you know, he's a wonderful guy, a dear friend. And we usually see eye to eye more or less. I tend to be a little bit more left, a little bit, he's a little bit more right, but generally speaking, we have the same general feeling about Israel and the U.S.-Israeli relationship and the various parties in the Middle East and the West Bank and Iran and so forth. So we're talking about the Bibi Netanyahu speech coming up, this uninvited, at least not by the White House, the administration of the United States. He's coming to speak to Congress. You know how divisive it has been. And I pointed out to Uzi, I said, I think this is bad for Israel. This is bad for the sacred relationship between Israel and the United States, which should be above partisan politics. I mean, what's he coming to talk to the Republicans, not the Democrats? I mean, since when did Israel support in the United States dependent on one party or the other? It's America's support that's important for Israel. So Uzi, who never loses his temper, started saying, "You're such a liberal. He never called me that before. You're a liberal." So I don't want to talk about this. I just want to bring it up because of the disco night, but it is dividing American Jews. It is overshadowing the whole Iran nuclear controversy that he wanted to come here to speak about. It's all about protocol. It's all about dissing the president. Now you have the Black Caucus doing this and so forth. And this is the last thing I think Israel needs. You know my position very well. But it is interesting to me how emotional this issue is. And I am sure when you speak to your parents in Israel or your other contacts there, that they are also, this must be the forefront of their thinking about the political situation.
You know, it is and it isn't. If you talk to Israelis two weeks before election day, they're actually, the big topic there is the economy. Apartments too expensive because, you know, the high-tech industry has taken hold like nowhere else in the world.
Oh, like San Francisco. It's the same thing.
Yeah, there are parts of Israel that are as expensive now as San Francisco. And so people who are the have-nots are complaining, hey, where's our share? So this election there has really little to do with what's going to happen when he comes to Washington. It's about the economy.
But I tell you this, the reason, why is Bibi talking about Iran and nukes? It is precisely because of what you just enunciated, Noam. It is because he doesn't want to talk about Israel's economy. Why talk about the economy where you have the kind of pressures that you just described when you can talk about the foreign enemy and the, you know, the existential threat and all that? It is, I think, so clear that what you have here is a domestic political ploy by Bibi to de-emphasize the economic issues in Israel and emphasize security issues, particularly the boogeyman Iran and these nuclear weapons. I think that it is clear to me as the driven snow, and I lament it. And if there's retaliation against people for not showing up at BB speech by Sheldon Adelson or any of these high rollers, I mean, shame on us. It really is intolerable to me. But like I said, that's not what I wanted to talk about. What I want to talk about is something that is equally provocative, and it has to do, CPAC is going on, the Conservative Political Action Convention that's going on, and you have some very fiery speeches. But you had an interesting juxtaposition yesterday. You had, first of all, at the White House, you had a meeting between the prominent civil rights leaders in the country, Black civil rights leaders largely. I mean, I looked at the guest list, including Al Sharpton going to the White House yesterday to meet and to strategize about civil rights purportedly. Across town, you had CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Convention, with Ben Carson, the Black, very renowned neurosurgeon who's become politically active after his retirement. And Crash, you have cut 10. Ben Carson, here he is talking about race and politics. You got it, buddy?
We have radical Islamic terrorist groups that are in their adolescent stage that wish to destroy us. And we have two choices. We can wait and see what they're going to do and react to it, or we can destroy them first. And what the mission that I would give our military is to destroy them first, and I wouldn't tie their hands and let them get it done.
Now, that's not the bite I wanted. The bite I wanted, Ben Carson says that Democrats are merely using blacks. They're trying to keep blacks suppressed. Democrats are, you have that? All right, play that.
You know, I hear some people saying, well, Carson, when he was a kid, you know, he benefited from welfare and all this stuff, so, and now he wants to get rid of it. I'm not interested in getting rid of the safety net. I'm really interested in getting rid of dependency. And I want us to find a way to allow people to excel in our society. And as more and more people hear that message, they will recognize who is truly on their side and who is trying to keep them suppressed and cultivate their votes.
So that's it. So is the Democratic Party trying to keep black people suppressed to cultivate their votes? In a sense, Noam, and this is, I think, fascinating, that's the same fear Republicans have or conservatives have about immigration. They think that's also a popular play for votes among Latinos. They think that the Democrats want all these immigrants coming, particularly from South and Central America, but also from Asia, because they come. The Asian vote reflects the Jewish vote and the black vote, really. It was 3-1 Democrat. They think that immigration is really a ploy to stuff the ballot box, that the Democrats are being cynical about immigration. They doing immigration the same way they're doing civil rights to cultivate the black vote or the brown vote. And I wonder if that is what people generally suspect. And I'd love to hear from folks at 866-HERALDO. Do you think that the reason the Democrats have this pro-immigration policy and this pro-civil rights policy is merely a ploy to generate votes? Or is there a sincere difference of opinion how to deal with social issues like immigration and like inequality in the country? Is it a ploy? Is it just cynicism? And in that regard, it's less than 14 hours now before the Department of Homeland Security runs out of funding. So the Republicans talk about Homeland Security as if it's the mantra, the most important thing in life is Homeland Security. And yet they are, the conservatives among them, threatening now with less than 14 hours ago to shut down government. So do Republicans really care about Homeland Security, or do they care about politics? Is this all about cynicism? Is this why we disrespect Washington so acutely? So this is what the menu is for today. And I would love, ladies and gentlemen, for you to help us out and give us your feeling, give us your gut feeling about what's really going on here. What's really happening in this country? I mean, is it really all about votes? Is it all about cynical undermining of basic American principles just to be elected?
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Is it all about votes? Is it all about manipulation? Is that the way you explain hardcore Homeland Security Republicans allowing the Homeland Security Department to be unfunded? Is that why Democrats court, or did they court black people by embracing civil rights? Is that really what it's about? Is Ben Carson right that the Democrats are only using and abusing? That's why they're for immigration? Eddie in New York, a lot of people on the line already. Eddie in New York, it's calling 866-Geraldo. Hey. What's up, Eddie?
Geraldo, what's up, brother? How you doing?
Good, good. Hope you have a good weekend. What's doing?
Thank you. Thanks for taking the call. Listen, I just want to ask you a question. Could you be so naive to think that this is not a Democratic power play for votes, this whole immigration thing? I mean, to be honest with you, these guys, they're only courting the Hispanics for the vote because they obviously see the growing demographic in the country, and they're not stupid.
But what about the – all right, I grant that, Eddie. Let me ask you this, though. Ronald Reagan said Latinos are really Republicans. They just don't know it yet. Latinos are entrepreneurial, enterprising, ambitious, family-oriented, faith-based. These people are the definition of Republican. Why don't the Republicans compete for the vote rather than try to suppress the vote?
Ronald Reagan also said that his biggest mistake as president was going along with the amnesty that he provided for the Democratic Congress at the time, Geraldo. I think you probably remember that.
I don't remember that, but I'll look it up. I trust you for it. Where's your family from?
My family's from Westchester. I live in the city. My brother's actually one of your colleagues there. He's not quite at your level yet, but he works for Cumulus.
Excellent. So come by and say hello.
And if I could do one more thing, can we just one thing about this whole ISIS thing and the troubles that they're giving us? Because I know you're very strong on doing some damage to them.
I hate them. I want them destroyed.
Colin Powell during the first Iraq War said something along the lines of, "We can't go to war with one hand tied behind our back because it's not a boxing match. The rules are not meant to be fair." And I understand the collateral damage, and I understand the fact that, you know, women and children and probably a lot of innocent people are going to die. But how are we, without literally just leveling their whole area over there, how are we going to actually defeat them without going door to door and knocking on the door?
Well, I think that's an excellent question. I appreciate your call, Eddie, and thanks. We'll look up your brother. Colin Powell also said about Iraq, if you break it, you keep it. You know, it's just like if you go in a store, you break it, you keep it. It's yours. Now it's ours. Unfortunately, President Obama lost sight of that and allowed ISIS to metastasize and cross from Syria into Iraq. Here is my quick plan. I want to get to your calls because I know that they're more interesting than what I have to say. But here's my plan for the defeat of ISIS. Bring back General David Petraeus, who's still very active as this lame charge that he gave his girlfriend, confidential, nationally secure information in exchange for their love affair, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't care about any of that. She was a colonel in the armed forces anyway, in the reserves. It was ridiculous. Bring back David Petraeus. Petraeus will help get some of those Sunni tribes back on our side. You've got to cut off Mosul, the second largest city in Iraq, which is the capital of ISIS in Iraq. Cut the city off. There are only 3,000, 4,000 in there. You've got to allow the Iraqi army to come in, the Kurds to come in, the air power, American air power. We've got to blow up everything that moves that has a black flag flying. It'll be bloody. It'll be difficult. But we saved Kobani. When Kobani was on the verge of falling, we can liberate Mosul. And once you liberate Mosul and get them out of Iraq, it's just a matter of time before we get them out of Syria. But we've got to pound them. We've got to kill them. But we cannot do it with total disregard for civilian casualties. I saw what that did in Afghanistan. You just can't blow up wedding parties and so forth and expect the Sunni tribes to come to our side of the table. But I think that everyone can understand what a terrible threat ISIS represents. I mean, they're killing Christians. I mean, in a genocidal way, they're rounding up Christian families. They are separating the women to become sex slaves. They are indoctrinating the children and converting the children, forced conversions from Christianity to the Sunni Islam. They are committing an atrocity against history itself. If you see the news today, they are destroying artifacts that date back before the time of Jesus. The Assyrian Christian community is absolutely being decimated, 300 of them kidnapped yesterday. This cannot stand. This is a crime against humanity. I want the Pope to speak out even more forcefully against it. He has spoken out. God bless him. But I want all of the European countries to understand what is happening here. This is a horrifying threat that must be addressed with great vigor and force. We must destroy them. We must capture them. We must kill them. We have to root them out, and I'm going to come to your questions.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
36 minutes after 10 o'clock. Welcome back. Friday. Thank God it is Friday. It is the 27th day, right? The 27th day of February. The last weekday of this short month. And then we'll be in March. And no sign of winter relenting.
No.
What is it? Is this global something?
Well, it's still winter till what? March 21?
March 21. Like, but yeah, you usually get breaks of spring.
Yeah, the
you
normal.
You usually get little sprouts. I mean, there hasn't even been a couple of 40-degree days in a row.
And normally the high on a day like today would be in the mid-40s.
In the mood? Really?
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
All right. So it's not global warming. It's climate change, whatever it is. Anyway, it's very uncomfortable. The coldest February, right, on record in
New
York?
Yeah.
One of them. All right, what do you think about politics? Is immigration all about politics? Is immigration really about the Democrats trying to get votes? Is civil rights really about the Democrats trying to get votes? Is the Homeland Security, is the Republicans' professed obsession with Homeland Security really all about getting votes? If not, why would they allow in less than 13 and a half hours the Homeland Security Department to be defunded because of their peak? They're pissed off over immigration. It's all about politics. So it's not really about Homeland Security. It's really about politics. So what role is that? That really, that low down and scurvy cynicism, how much does that play? Is that why so many people give Congress such a low approval rating? I mean, just skidding along the bottom there. So what are you thinking? 866 Geraldo. We'll start with Rudy in Yonkers. Rudy, thank you very much for calling. What's up?
I'm a retired naval officer, and I think your view is very biased because of your heritage, number one. Number two, you know, there's always money for your...
Wait, back up. Why do you attribute it to my ethnicity? I mean, isn't that a low blow? I mean, what if I came up to you and I say, well, I don't know what ethnic group you belong to, but say that that is what influences and invests your political beliefs. Can I have an idea that's not tied to my brown skin?
You know, absolutely. You're, of course you could have that, but I've been listening to you for years. And, you know, this whole immigration thing, you keep disregarding the fact that it's illegal, number one. And there always seems to be money for illegal immigrants. There always seems to be money for entitlements. And I'm a veteran, and every year they're trying to reduce my benefits. You know, how do you account for that? I'm a citizen who served in our military and served our country. They continually try to reduce my benefits, but there's always money for entitlements and for illegal immigration. How do you explain that?
Well, I think that you are generalizing. I believe that people who serve this country in uniform deserve the best treatment the government gives anybody. I think you should definitely get the best benefits and the most access to whether it's health care or pension, whatever it is. But to suggest that immigrants have been a net negative on this country, I think you're absolutely wrong, with all due respect.
I'm not saying they're negative. I'm saying they're a vote. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that they're actually a vote.
Well, let me ask you a yes or no question. Do you believe that the president's executive order on immigration is to get votes? Because these people aren't on a track to citizenship. They are merely being deferred from deportation.
I think there's no question in my mind it's to get votes.
Well, that was my question, and you've answered my question. And I believe that, and again, thank you for your service. Where were you anyway? What did you do in the Navy?
I'm doing a Vietnam era, although I did not actually serve in Vietnam. I was mostly in the Sixth Fleet in
the Mediterranean?
Yes, and I was also an intelligence officer for a couple of years.
We could use a real Sixth Fleet re-energized in the Mediterranean today. That's where the real threat is. But anyway, again, Rudy, thank you for your service. I'm deeply distressed by the cynicism, and yet I got to be grown up about it. I understand that. Why do people viscerally have this response, particularly, as he says, to Latino immigrants? Not about the Asians and, you know, the others that came before. You know, you go to any Irish bar in New York, you know, I guarantee you that the half the people working at the Irish bar are from Ireland. They're here on, you know, visitors' visas or whatever. Why this visceral reaction? Is it racial? I don't know. Is it a feeling that it is an underhanded ploy by the Democrats to get votes? I think a lot of people think that. Or maybe things get all mushed together. You know, maybe that it's impossible to talk about politics in America today without talking about race. You know, the Republican Party is an overwhelmingly white party. The Democratic Party is an overwhelmingly, I was going to say colored party, but someone got in trouble, a party of color. It is, you know, so race and politics are inextricably interwoven. Now you have a black president also. And that's like the Beebe thing. I don't mean to ramble here, but like the Beebe thing. If all of the congressmen who don't show up are black, What's that going to do with the whole black Jewish thing,
it
which always has tension, you know, from the landlord days and the pawn shop days and all the rest of that? And I remember how so many Jews were in the forefront of the civil rights movement back in the day, and that for a time dispelled the old stereotype and made for a great relationship between Jews and blacks. Is that now going to be negatively impacted by this whole BB thing? Are people thinking even about that? So everything is. Here's a comment on the Homeland Security lapse that's coming up. Here's Clark in New Jersey. Hi, Clark.
Hey, how you doing, Geraldo? I was going to say two things, but now that you were just talking about the Irish, you know, the Irish are coming here on visas because they can't get in the country, because the Democrats stopped that. Was Kennedy, Teddy Kennedy. Where they don't, the Europeans, very difficult for them to get in the country. The white Europeans, extremely difficult.
I agree. I agree that there has been a flip of the old priorities now. I agree.
Yeah, so that's not right, racial prejudice.
Well, I think that it is what it is, but you can put a definition on it. But all right, what else were you going to say, Clark?
Okay, hold on. I was going to say that, first of all, you're blaming the Republicans. I thought you were a Republican.
I am.
But okay, you're blaming the Republicans for shutting down Homeland Security.
I am.
Right at this moment, they're having a vote to extend it for 3 weeks, and it's the Democrats who are not extending it. And, well, as usual, on television, in front of Congress.
You have to watch Fox.
They're blaming the Republicans again.
Watch Fox. You won't see that.
I'm sorry?
You have to watch Fox News.
No, I'm watching C-SPAN right now.
Oh, well.
And I'm seeing that it's the Democrats who are not extending the funding, not the Republicans, the Democrats, straight down party lines. So, you know, this is the stuff that's put out there, and that's why everybody's blaming the Republicans for all this. It's not the Republicans, it's the Democrats. And originally,
wait a second. Clark, are you a businessman? You sound like you could be a management guy.
I used to have my own business.
All right. Now,
I
if you had a business and I promised you 3 weeks of business Are you going to, like, expand your business? Are you going to do anything based on the assurance that you're going to get funding for 3 weeks? It is preposterous. It's the stopgappest of stopgap measures. A three-week reprieve. So what? 3 weeks from now, we go through the same hardship again, and what? Then we're gonna have then they'll extend it for 2 weeks. And then it'll be for 1 week. Then it'll be for 6 days. I mean, come on.
Well, I believe the Republicans want to extend it so they could have an honest debate on the subject.
You really believe that? You believe that these people, that's what I'm talking about this morning, about honesty in politics. Do you think they really want an honest debate? They don't want an honest debate. They want a dishonest debate. They want a debate that favors whatever their particular constituents or the pressure points within their party want. The Democrats cater to the hard left, the Republicans cater to the hard right, and the moderates, that's the real silent majority on both sides of the aisle. I bet you if you were going to go and really survey Republicans aside from the hardcore right wing of the Republican Party on the Homeland Security, talk to Pete King. Pete King is my kind of Republican.
Okay. Well, yeah, I don't know, Geraldo. You know, this is a minor point here. There's a major point, which was the third thing I wanted to get to, was this whole thing is unconstitutional. Because, you know, you can read it in Article 1, Section 8, that both funding and the naturalization of immigrants into the country is there.
Article I agree one, with you eight. That that is the yourself. That is in the Constitution, but remember, Clark, and I appreciate your thoughtful call, remember the president is not putting these people on the path toward naturalization / citizenship. This is deferred deportments. Which is clearly, I believe, will be found even by this Supreme Court to be within the purview of the executive branch. He can do that if he wants. He can give the Border Patrol priorities. He can give ICE agents priorities. His priority is, oh, you arrest the immigrants who are here, who are committing crimes, who are violent, who are not obeying our laws. But don't arrest Juan and Maria or Hao Ching and, someone else. If they're not breaking the law, other than the fact that they are here, or the Irish guy that overstayed his visa. Don't bust him. Don't deport him. He's been here for a long time. He has citizen children. Just think of it in terms of it makes it easier to more palatable. Think of it in terms of the Irish bartender who came 12 years ago to escape the troubles, or 15 years ago to escape the troubles. And he married, him and his Irish girlfriend came. They got married here. They have citizen children. And now he's worried he's going to get deported. That's the guy that I'm talking about. Maybe if you think of him in terms of being an Irish guy, it makes it easier. 48 minutes after. Wow. Right back.
The sound of the city. Geraldo. Where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
We will have someone who leads and ultimately will send a message not only that we will protect American soil, but do not take this upon freedom-loving people anywhere else in the world. We need a leader with that kind of confidence. If I can take on 100,000 protesters, I can do the same across the world.
All right, there's the governor of Wisconsin, Scott Walker, kind of comparing the union demonstrators in Wisconsin to ISIS.
I mean, it's kind of a stretch.
I appreciate he's only a governor. He has no foreign policy cred. But as good or bad as you think public sector unions are, to compare them to ISIS might be a little intense. I think the thing that gets me, I mean, now they're suggesting that some of the members of CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference convention going on right now, will walk out when Governor Jeb Bush seeks to address the conference.
Why is that?
Because he's not right-wing enough, that he's not hard right, he's not a Tea Party type, that he's not conservative enough. I mean, in short, remember Jeb Bush has said that the Republican Party is anti-science, anti-immigration, and anti-something else. I forget what. But anyway, I thought that's precisely why Jeb Bush should be the most formidable candidate. That's why they picked George W. Bush, because they wanted to win the election. Duh. They don't want to win the primary. They want to win the election. That's what George H.W. Bush did. He kind of triangulated in that slick way that Bill Clinton did. Scott Walker, if he plays that right wing thing, He's not going to be able to buy lunch when it comes to the general election. Jeb Bush, and that's why I think Jeb Bush is the only Republican that can beat Hillary Clinton. I mean, that's my view of it. Now, Rand Paul, he's talking Benghazi. Give me a Benghazi break already. It's not going to have any legs. They've shown a million ways to Sunday that Benghazi was, well, Benghazi was a tragedy, and maybe it should have been foreseen. You know, a whole lot of things should have been foreseen in the Middle East. Getting rid of Gaddafi from the get-go should have been foreseen. But I think that Hillary would be an extremely formidable candidate. The women's movement is extremely powerful in this country, and Jeb Bush is the only one because he can bring in Hispanic votes who can beat her.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Welcome back. 6 minutes after 11 o'clock on this Friday, the 27th day of February, the last weekday of the month. March 1st is Sunday. Spring just 3 weeks away. No sign of it, though. I'm very upset, you know, as the father of three, that very upset about Noam, your rape story up in the Tremont section of the Bronx. So you say the surveillance video clearly portrays the perpetrator. Where can people see that surveillance video so maybe someone can recognize this creep, this animal, and call 911?
Yeah, so if you go to easiest place, 7 Online, which is Channel 7's website, 7 Online. And it's the second story in, and you can watch this video, and it's really clear. I mean, they block out this poor 12-year-old girl who was raped, but you can see this guy's face. So somebody's going to know him, and hopefully somebody will drop a dime on him.
All right, so 7 Online, go to that video. Please, please, I'd love to have this animal, you know, in his kennel before the end of today. I mean, imagine how people feel, but just a 12-year-old. I mean, just scum, just absolute scum. Horrifying. You know, I was talking about politics and cynicism and people gaming the system. You know, Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, the Tea Party darling. He beat my friend Charlie Crist in the primary for Senate. And he's talking about running for president of the United States. I liked Marco Rubio. I put it in the past tense because now I'm not so sure. Why? Marco Rubio, last year when the Senate came close to a comprehensive, or actually the year before, they came close to a comprehensive immigration reform compromise. And the Senate actually passed a bill that was a bipartisan bill. And it went to the House where it languished. They never even voted on it. Boehner wouldn't even allow the House to vote on it. So Marco Rubio, who, of course, is of Cuban descent, was in favor of a bill. And, you know, he's in favor of that bill and, generally speaking, was a reform-minded guy. He was a compromiser. He was even though he was a Tea Party darling, he tried to be because of his own personal experience and whatever, he wanted to be the bridge between the parties. Now, I just want to read you what he said. He just spoke at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference going on right now, and he said, "You have 10 or 12 million people in this country, many of whom have lived here for longer than a decade, have not otherwise violated our law other than immigration laws. I get all that." That, of course, is the president's declaration that has pissed off the hard right so much that, these people, 10 or 12 million in this country more than a decade, violated no law other than coming here. So he gets that. That's the person that would be deferred from deportation under the president's plan. But he goes on to say, "But what I've learned is that you can't even have a conversation about that until people believe and know, not just believe, but it's proven to them that future illegal immigration will be controlled." Which, of course, is an impossible, a height to climb there, a vault to leap. So basically, here's a man who, at a principle, believes something. He's the Tea Party darling. Tea Party gets mad at him. Now he's running for president. He needs the Tea Party vote. So he said, "Never mind. I was wrong 2 years ago. I get it now. However compassionate, it's not about compassion. It's about strengthening the, he just adopts the rhetoric. You see what I mean?
Yeah, but you know what? The Republicans have it tough because you have those first four or five primaries when you're running for president, and you have to run to the hard right. And it does some of those candidates in, because once you get out of New Hampshire, Iowa, South Carolina, then you get to really what the rest of the nation is. And the rest of the nation's more middle of the road than Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina.
That's why the Republicans can't get elected. They can't win a general election. Are you kidding me? But my point is this. My point is, you can't say what you really believe. Is that where politics is now? Where you know that people are lying? Like Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney, the nicest governor Massachusetts ever had. Effective. People liked him. Popular. And then he runs for president and he just says, never mind, everything I said when I was governor of Massachusetts, I don't mean any of that. Who listening here has changed their personal opinions on issues, central issues, core value issues in real life? I don't think many people change their core issues. I don't think that I've changed very much since I was in high school, since I read my first newspaper.
Right.
And yet to run for office, you've got to be this creepy person, and then you gradually bring it back as you say, the primary season goes into more moderate states, you sound more moderate, and then you come on, and then you run for election, then you're like a totally unrecognizable person from the person who won in Iowa. I just think that the way the system is designed now, and to see this exercise, now it's CNN's got a clicker. I think Fox may also have a clicker. It's under 13 hours before they defund Homeland Security, and it's a Friday night. It's a Friday night, and it's a winter Friday night, and, the Senate might vote to extend for 3 weeks. The House will never go along with that. So there's going to be a shutdown, it looks like. By midnight tonight, it'll be a shutdown. And so people will stop getting paid. You know, I don't know when payday is in the federal system. Maybe someone can call and tell us. But then you're in the Coast Guard and you're on your cutter and you're freezing your balls off out in New York.
No, but they
Harbor.
Will not get a check.
They're not going to get a check.
Are you sure of that?
I swear to God, they are not getting a check. Because
you've had these shutdowns before and then somehow they're still getting checks.
Eventually you get paid.
Right.
You don't get paid now. When it's settled and they bring back the non-essential payroll clerk person who can type out the check.
And that's the person hurt the most.
That's the person hurt.
They're living check to check.
But, I mean, everyone's living check to check when you're working for the government.
Well, no.
Yeah, well,
that's not true anymore. Yeah.
Especially if you work for the Port Authority. I don't think they got anybody that makes less than $100,000 a year in the Port Authority. Anyway, I just think that it's really creepy to me. It is really totally creepy. And he is Harry in Brooklyn. 866 Geraldo. Hi, Harry. You're on the line. Thanks for your patience.
Hi, Geraldo. Thanks for taking the call. I just want to comment. You're looking for people's opinion on cynicism today. If you want to take a step back and look at this whole Bibi situation and the controversy that's ensued, this to me seems just like a completely cynical ploy by the White House and probably the left wing of the Democratic Party to create a wedge between Democrats and Israel by making them pick a side. If you know that the White House tried to claim that Bibi's trying to make this a political speech for his election in Israel, and we would never allow such a thing. But in 1996, there was no problem when Shimon Peres, a month before the election, in which he was running against Netanyahu, was welcomed to the White House, had three photo ops in a period of a few days, and there was no issue about it. So to say the United States would never allow something like that is pure nonsense.
All right, Harry, I think that's a very vivid and if accurate, I don't know, I don't remember 1996 and Shimon Peres, who I like very much. I like Bibi too. I know Bibi better, although I've been with both men many times. But I have to go back to the invitation to Bibi this time around. Why did it come in secret? Why was it a stealth invitation? Why was it engineered, if the New York Times reporting is accurate, between Dermer, the ambassador to Israel, and John Boehner's office? Why that kind of sneaky stuff? And isn't that who's manufacturing it, is my point.
The Times retracted their initial story that the White House was not informed. In fact, the White House was informed.
Well, I don't know. Everyone tells me the Times is retracted. I see it today in the Times.
An invitation to speak before Congress does not come from the President of the United States. It comes from the Speaker of the House. Just like Boehner could not invite Netanyahu, to the White House. That's not his role. It's not his position. So it's perfectly proper for the Speaker of the House, and it's happened
many
times.
If you think it's proper, then why the big flap? Why the big flap?
In the last year.
And why we have all this trouble? Why we have all this trouble? No one is even talking about Iran and nukes. They're talking about protocol and dissing the president.
Who's talking about protocol? Who's talking about it? It's the people who want to create this device.
You think this is good for the Israeli-American relationship?
Absolutely not. It's horrible for it.
Well, Harry, on that note of agreement, and I thank you for your call, a very smart call. John in Brooklyn, what's up, John?
Hey, Geraldo, I love the topic of immigration. You know that. And also, I want to commend you because you get much better at taking shots from us that are all up on you sometimes.
When you're a boxer as mediocre as I am, you got to get used to taking shots.
Well, you're not shutting us down, and we need a voice in this, and I appreciate you letting us have it. When you see images in the news at night of immigrants on rail cars being shuffled into this, you know, into the country, whether it's, you know, through the border or whatever it is, it invokes a reaction in Americans. You know, these people are not playing by the rules. That's the bottom line. And also the quality of the immigrant, without sounding racist, is not what we need in this country. These are extremely third world populations of people that integrate into our system and immediately start sucking off it. And it invokes a reaction.
The way you vividly portray it, John. God bless you. I mean, you put the words together to create a vivid image that I think is inaccurate. I think it's inaccurate.
That's what the media is showing me. That's what I'm.
Well, that's true. What the media is showing you, the anti-immigration media is showing you that. I agree. But what about the guys in Silicon Valley that overstay their visas and work there? You know, I go back to the Irish bartender and the Polish guy, meat guy in Chicago. I don't want to stereotype people, but you got all kinds of people coming in. You got a million Filipinos coming in now. You've got the Chinese and the South Asians outnumber the Latinos.
Right, but they integrate into our system. It's a different.
Do they?
Yeah, they do, Geraldo.
Ultimately they all do. That's my point. However they got here, ultimately they all meld into the system because America is a very powerful culture. All the Cubans who came. Now in the second generation, they don't even speak Spanish anymore, or they do as a second language. They eat McDonald's.
There's a huge Mexican population that sends money back to Mexico.
There's a huge Mexican population. Exactly. What have the Mexicans done in Washington Heights? Have you been around Washington Heights lately? You see what they've done there? What they've done in Spanish Harlem? They have bodegas. They have the butcher shops. They have they've resurrected abandoned. I just think that anyway, another good call. I just think that I want controlled immigration, but I want vigorous immigration. The strength of America is in this immigrant population. Our strength is in lowering our average age. We're fighting a demographic war against the Soviets, listen to me.
Going old school on me.
Yeah, really. It was like a senior citizen lapse just then. Brain fart. Against the Russians the totalitarian enemies like the Chinese, etc. We harness the energy. I think that the vast majority, and tell me if this is not true, the vast majority of people who complain about this immigrant epidemic have never in their lives been negatively impacted by an immigrant. Many of them, in the Midwest, for instance, have never even seen an immigrant, a Latino or Asian immigrant. They've never even seen one. And those are the people that tend to be the most ferocious in their opposition to undocumented.
Well, it is interesting, you brought this up before, that it seems to all focus on Latinos.
Yeah.
Whereas if I were to go to Flushing, Queens today, I bet you I could find a lot of Asians who were here.
That's a what do they say legally. Now? 164 nations in Queens.
From New York, for New York. Live, local, on it. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
All right, so this is what they are saying in the House, which just passed this stopgap measure. Nancy Pelosi is calling it amateur hour. She says the GOP is acting like crazy people. And the reason they agreed to extend Homeland Security for 3 weeks is so the government can stay open when Bibi Netanyahu speaks. That we'll have Homeland Security when Bibi comes to address his controversial...
That's her accusation.
That's her accusation. That's strictly, that's as partisan as you could possibly get. But the House now has passed this three-week spending bill.
Yeah, so, and we're looking to see what the numbers are. It was overwhelming on the Senate side. The congressional side, it was 200 and something to 183.
Well, has the Senate voted on a three-week? I don't think so. The Senate, as I get it, so what you've had is you had the three-week extension approved by the House of Representatives.
Right.
The Senate now is much more moderate than the House. They are conceding defeat, according to the Associated Press, and they are looking now for a year-long extension of the Department of Homeland Security funding without the immigration attachment. In other words, the House is saying, we'll give you 3 weeks
to figure this out.
The Senate is saying, no, let's go for the full year and take immigration out of it. It just looks like the GOP has lost this one.
And of course, it all goes back to politics, right? We're 21 months away from another presidential election. That's all anybody, I think, is thinking about when they're trying to decide whether to approve this bill or kick it down the road.
Well, here's the vote. 240 to 183. 240 to 183 for a three-week funding bill. But I'll quote from the Associated Press. But on the Senate side, Republicans have already admitted defeat and are moving to approve a full year bill full of contentious immigration provisions. All right. So whatever.
Confusing is what it is.
Well, it's not so confusing if you strip it down to what it is. This was like Ted Cruz in 2013 when he shut it down. Was that about immigration also? Well, no, it was Obamacare. Remember, he shut it down because of Obamacare.
Right.
He didn't want Obamacare to be funded, so he shut it down. And that didn't work out, and he looked like an ass. And I think that undercut his presidential aspirations, maybe forever, but certainly for now. And now they're trying to use this denial of funding approach, which doesn't work. Shutting down the government for a political purpose. Like I said, what's going to be next? You're going to shut down the government because you don't like the pension the president gets? I mean, it's preposterous. What else is it?
Geraldo, live, local, today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
All right, we got it figured out now at 37 minutes after 11 o'clock on this 27th day of February, last weekday in February. Spring 3 weeks away, no sign of it, though. There is a pale sunshine out there. Do you know what? How cold is it? It was freezing. It was 19 when I came.
Yeah, 26. It's just going to get a little warmer before the day's out.
All right, here's what happened in Washington. Talk about frigid. First, the House passed a three-week extension of Homeland Security. They sent that bill to the Senate for passage. So the House, that's your congressman, they voted for a three-week extension in the funding of the Department of Homeland Security. They sent it to the Senate. The Senate rejected it. You needed 60 votes to reject it. They got the 60 votes to reject the House three-week extension. And instead, the Senate passed a clean funding bill for the Department of Homeland Security by 68 to 31. In other words, the Senate was sane enough to pass a full year extension of the Department of Homeland Security's funding without this immigration baloney. So they took out the immigration stuff. The Senate has passed a clean Department of Homeland Security funding bill. Now, though, they have to send that back to the House, and the House has to approve the Senate bill. That's the impasse now. Will the House see the light as the Senate has seen the light? I wouldn't hold my breath. Therefore, it is still possible that you're going to get a shutdown in the Department of Homeland Security because they're knuckleheads. That's why. It's preposterous. The Senate instantly said, okay, let's vote on immigration separately. And that's what they're trying to do right now. They've separated the issues as they should have done from the get-go. One had nothing to do with the other. The Senate split immigration off and passed a full year refunding of the Department of Homeland Security, 68 to 31. So there is substantial bipartisan support for the Senate approving of a clean Department of Homeland Security funding bill. What the House does now, though, is still a mystery. And if I could figure that out, I would let you know. Hi, Mary in Westchester. Thank you for holding on. I appreciate it. What's on your mind today?
Oh, hi. Well, first of all, I'm a conservative, and you're the only person that I enjoy listening to that I don't agree with all the time.
That's because I'm pleasant and I like you.
That you've got a great personality. So anyway, it's so frustrating that we somehow get this argument comes back to Republicans or conservatives not liking immigrants, and that's just ridiculous. What we're unhappy about is the process that a lot of our policies are being implemented through executive orders, and that's what's so scary and frightening whenever the president issues another executive order. And it makes sense if it, you know, even if a policy makes perfect sense and it's the right thing to do, it still needs to be done correctly. Otherwise, one day we'll have a president who comes up with an idea that is terrible, but we've set this precedent that, oh, just do an executive order.
Well, you are such a smart lady, and I appreciate your call. Very thoughtful, and I understand that concept. But let me say this about immigration particularly. We ran into Ann Coulter when we were filming out in Los Angeles recently, this week. And her next book is all about Republicans have to be against undocumented immigration. That's the only issue. That is the issue. In other words, she's trying to steer. She and Laura Ingraham are trying to steer Republicans into this very harsh anti-immigration stance because they perceive that as the definition of a true conservative. Maybe for the reasons that the lady just expressed. People have different reasons. I think that what we just heard from Mary was the most noble reason, that you just don't want the president exceeding his constitutional authority, which I'm totally in line with. I get that. I don't think he did in this case, but that's just my opinion. You can argue that. But her idea that we're against the principle of executive privilege and executive authority, that's a sound and fully supportable idea. But going back to my point about Ann and Laura and stirring up this anti-immigration fervor, where you saw Senator Marco Rubio, I alluded before to how he changed his position, having once seen the fury that the immigration issue generates, he said, okay, I give up. I think that that is wrongheaded, and I argued with Ann about it, and I'll argue with anybody, any of our callers about it. I think that if the Republican Party is going to be the one trick pony, if that's going to be their whole philosophy in life, then they're doomed to not have the White House. You can't win the White House if you piss off everybody who has roots to the immigrant, the recent immigrant, late 20th and early 20th and 21st century immigrant. If you can't appeal to the Asians and the Latinos, where's your majority going to come from? You can win the primaries, but you're not going to win the White House. And that's why I think Jeb Bush is the strongest candidate. But these, read Laura, read Ann Coulter about Jeb Bush. They want to impeach Jeb Bush before he ever gets in office. They hate the idea of Jeb Bush running. They hate it. It is anathema to conservative Tea Party Republicans that Jeb Bush would run, despite the fact that this is the guy that's raising all the money. He's put Chris Christie in some corner someplace. Forget about Christie. You know, Christie's got $10 compared to Jeb Bush's $10 million in terms of what he's rounding up all these high rollers, all of the so-called business Republicans, the Chamber of Commerce Republicans flocking to Jeb Bush for the same reason, that he can actually win. So I think that this is very wrongheaded, and I also understand this. And again, this is going back to what Mary said, that I'm the only commentator that she listens to that she doesn't agree with, but she listens to. One of the problems is talk radio. I hate to say it, but when you have a constant drumbeat about immigrants and they're killing and raping and stealing jobs and, you know, bringing diseases and they're terrorists, and that's all you hear when you listen to AM radio, after a while, you start to believe it. But I just think that there is a disconnect between having a hit radio show and getting a president elected. You know, you're not voting for Rush Limbaugh. You're voting for whoever the Republican candidate is. And I think that the Republicans are gearing up, it seems to me, and there's no such thing as party elders anymore, because the Tea Party has the energy, has the... You read that article in the Post that talked about evangelical Protestants and the evangelical community, Protestant and Catholic, and the disproportionate power they wield in terms of the House of Representatives and so forth. You used to have, moral majority, Jerry Falwell.
Right.
He talked about the moral majority, the silent majority. Nixon also spoke of it. How the folks that didn't raise their voices but that really represented this country were conservatives, generally speaking. But it's not a majority. It's 25%, 30% at most of the Republican Party, and a far smaller percentage of the nation, in the low 20s percentage of the nation. That you can't. It's not a majority anymore. You can't use these issues. This is the same crowd that's against gay marriage, against abortion, ferociously against. They want to ban all abortion. The immigration issue is also huge. Marijuana is the one issue where you get squishy. The Tea Party smokes dope also. But those other three, you can't win campaigning against those three issues. You won't get my vote. I'm not going to vote for you if you're going to be against immigration reform. And I'm a Republican. I want to vote for Jeb Bush. You know, I voted for George W. Bush in 2004. So you're not going to get my vote if you don't vote for woman's right to choose. You're not going to get my vote if you don't vote for immigration reform. And you're not going to get my vote if you're opposed to gay marriage. I mean, you just got to get with the program. I mean, I want to be pro-business. I want to be for a strong national defense. I want to be for a vigorous foreign policy. I said 100 times how disappointed I was in President Obama's tardiness and naivete when it came to dealing with ISIS and radical Islam. But this is the now and here, and it affects my friends and my life. And, you know, you vote issues that are more immediate to your circumstance. Yes, I want to defeat ISIS. I want to destroy ISIS. I want to wipe them off the face of the earth. Yes, I want America to be safe from our foreign enemies. Yes, I want Israel to persevere and prosper and be strong. But if you're going to be getting me on these issues so close to home, you're not going to win the... Watch, the camera's going to fall. You're not going to win the majority.
All some right. of those issues, are, by the way, I think are sort of settled. I mean, when you come to gay marriage, state by, what is it, 38 states?
Not among the evangelical community, it's not settled.
It's hard to imagine these... Republicans are going to take that on this time around. I maybe early on in those early primaries, but after that, I think they let it go.
Well, we'll see what damage the early primaries do. I'm coming back at...
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-GERALDO. 77 WABC.
Take me out to the ball game. I'm a lot of things, but I've been a Yankee fan. That's more, that identifies me in so many ways. Mantle, Maris, those days, Whitey Ford, Yogi Berra. I love the Yankees. I love going to the Yankee Stadium. But so much of their future depends, it seems to me, or at least their bottom line, on how Alex Rodriguez does. It depends so importantly on Alex Rodriguez that we're going to start a weekly Friday afternoon A-Rod report with Guns Gunzelman,
yeah,
who joins us right now.
Woo!
So is he going to play third base for the Yankees?
No, he's definitely not playing third base. Chase Headley, who the Yankees had last year but got hit in the face with a pitch, they actually re-signed him for 4 more years. So A-Rod is done, definitely out at third. So
will he play first base or a designated
Well, that
hitter?
Is the thing. So he starts his apology tour last week, all right, to the fans. He decides to do a handwritten letter as if that, oh, you must really be heartfelt. You decide to handwrite a letter, you idiot. Like, come on now. Won't address questions. Goes to practice earlier this week, spring training, 2 days earlier than he was supposed to. All right, so he already made his own team officials angry because, like, he didn't even tell them they were going. So now, as of yesterday, he goes, oh, I'll play first base if they need me. Putting Mark Teixeira, the current first baseman, under getting grilled yesterday, being like, I guess he can teach him how to play first base. Putting him under the knife.
How much do the Yankees owe him?
$61 million.
They owe him $61 million. How old is he?
He turns 40 in July this year.
And they owe him $61
million? $61
million. How many years?
I think he's got 3 more years or something like that. Yeah.
61. What a great deal.
Yeah. What happened to us?
How's he going to do?
I know he's not going to do good at all this year. Absolutely not. He might. He barely.
Is he going to be disruptive?
Oh yes, it's going to be. It's going to be a fun year. Let me tell you.
All right, stand by every Friday afternoon. The Guns Gunselman A-Rod Report. Right here. Have a great weekend, everybody. We love you. Thanks for listening. Bye bye.
This is Rick Burgess from The Rick Burgess Show. If you're still auto-renewing your car insurance without shopping around, you are probably throwing money away. I'm telling you, go check out Insurify. In about 2 minutes, totally free, you can compare quotes from over 100 companies all in one place. Now, here's what I love. Insurify actually monitors your rates and alerts you when prices drop, so you never miss out on a better deal. Millions of people have used it to stop overpaying, and there's no reason you shouldn't too. Do yourself a favor. See what you can save right now at Insurify.com.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.